listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome to Wildlife, Wild Places, a program that centers on current and creative efforts in preservation, conservation, and advocacy for wildlife and wild habitats around the world. I'm your host, Donna Haleson, and in this episode, we'll be heading to Topsail Island in North Carolina, where I'm serving as a member of the Sea Turtle Project's Beach Patrol. From May through August, which is turtle nesting season, another volunteer and I will be walking a mile along the coast, rain or shine, each Friday before 7 a.m. Ours is one of 35 teams monitoring the northernmost portion of this precious barrier island's 26-mile shoreline. The section to which my partner Lois and I have been assigned runs from the St. Regis Resort to the end of North Topsail Beach, a tricky stretch, as there is a good deal of erosion in the area. Sand has been pumped onto the shore in what's called a soft engineering process, known as beach filling, beach renourishment, beach replenishment, or beach dredge and fill. Hard structures, sandbag walls, have also been put in place to protect 39 homes. Female sea turtles flipper onto the beach to dig nests in the lower dunes. And even though they face substantial challenges getting to where they want to get on this portion of the island, turtle activity has been seen in the section immediately south of ours, so I'm hoping we'll see more of the same up our way. Other places in North Carolina are also beginning to see activity. Baldhead Island and Fort Fisher State Recreation Area have, at the time of this recording in mid-May, reported nests. There was a false crawl, which I'll explain later on in the program, on Onslow Beach in Camp Lejeune a few days ago. Georgia and South Carolina have also reported nests. Topsail Island is one of the northern rookeries for the threatened species that is the loggerhead. Because of all the threats, from predation to plastics, marine debris to mechanized fishing, only 1 in 1,000 of these sea turtles will survive a year. Only 1 in 5,000 to 10,000 will survive to maturity. Well, let's take a short break. When we return, we'll talk sea turtle, touching on everything from the 7 species to incubation and hatching to sea turtle hangouts, life cycles, and threats. I'll share tidbits from the training I've received that has prepared me to be a beach monitor. And I'll tell you about false crawls, boils, nest sitters, rampers, and citizen scientists. By the end of the show, I promise you'll know why the northern rookeries are so crucial to the continuation of sea turtles. So please sit, stay. We'll be right back after this pause.
It's hard to find time for your furry family member. That's where Camp Bow Wow comes in. All-day play and overnight camp, daycare and boarding for dogs. Everything is included. Large play areas for fun and exercise. Spacious cabins, comfy cots, even live camper cams to watch from a computer or smartphone. Camp Bow Wow offers the best care and is the place to go where a dog can be a dog. For locations and more information, visit campbowwow.com.
Yuppie Puppy City Kitty provides pet lovers an opportunity to earn up to 50% commission selling our premium pet products. Advocate Gina Brick says, the opportunity to share such a quality product line with other pet lovers is amazing. The support of the Yuppie Puppy City Kitty family while working the business is a true gift. Mention special code PETLIFE when you enroll today and receive 3 additional products free. Find us at www.ypckpets.com. That's ypckpets.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
We're back, and again, you're listening to Donna Haleson on Pet Life Radio's Wildlife, Wild Places. Before the break, I noted that I am counted among the volunteers helping monitor sea turtle activity on Topsail Island in North Carolina. Before we move on to talk about sea turtles, however, let's get ourselves situated. As I mentioned at the outset, Topsail is a 26-mile-long barrier island off the coast of North Carolina, sitting just south of Camp Lejeune, the Bogue Banks, and the Outer Banks. Three communities are found on this stretch of land: North Topsail Beach, Surf City, and Topsail Beach. Topsail Island's name, and it is Topsail, not Topsail, is said to harken back to the late 1700s, early 1800s, when pirates would lie in wait in the channel between the island and the mainland. When merchant vessels loaded with valuable goods would pass by, the pirates would strike and claim their ill-gotten gains. Eventually, merchants caught on to their enemies' plots and began looking for the telltale topsails of the pirate ships. Treasure hunters are still attracted to the island, drawn in hopes of finding the plunder Blackbeard is reputed to have buried somewhere in the area's maritime forests. That pirate heritage is still in evidence today as well in some of the area's shops and ships, and is featured in an exhibit at the Missiles and More Museum on the island. At that facility as well, visitors can learn about the U.S. Navy's secret missile testing program, Operation Bumblebee, that operated on Topsail from 1946 to 1948. Though a history filled with pirates and missiles might suggest otherwise, Topsail, with its pristine beaches and laid-back vibes, is today such a peaceful, throwback kind of place that it's earned the nickname Mayberry by the Sea. And it was in this idyllic setting that a little girl, Karen Beasley, fell in love with sea turtles. In a story featured in Wake Forest magazine, Beth Parker Stout, a childhood friend of the girl, recalled that when Karen was in grade school, she saw a sea turtle lay her eggs on the beach and go back to the ocean. She and her mom stayed up watching the eggs into the early morning of the following day. That love for and that desire to protect and preserve sea turtles defined Karen's life. In the years that followed, she and her family would conduct regular turtle nest patrols along Topsail's coastline, erasing tracks to hide nests, filling holes so mama turtles wouldn't get trapped, and guarding and tallying any and all eggs they found. Karen succumbed to leukemia in 1991 at age 29. As her health was declining, she specified to her mother, Jean, that her insurance funds be used to do something good for sea turtles. Together, mother and daughter began to organize their sea turtle protection efforts into the Topsail Turtle Project, writing a mission statement, structuring the beach monitoring program, and recruiting volunteers. In 1997, 6 years after Karen's passing, the first sick and injured turtles were rescued and rehabilitated. The initial hospital was housed in a 900-square-foot building until June of 2014, when home became a new 13,000-square-foot, $1.5 million facility. According to its mission statement, the Karen Beasley Sea Turtle Rescue and Rehabilitation Center is dedicated to the conservation and protection of all species of marine turtles, both in the water and on the beach. The center is dedicated as well to the rescue, rehabilitation, and release of sick and injured sea turtles. The center is also committed to informing and educating the public regarding the plight of all sea turtles and the threat of their extinction, and providing an experiential learning site for students of biology, wildlife conservation, and/or veterinary medicine from around the world. Karen's mother, Jean, continues to serve as the organization's executive director, and the center, which is located at 302 Tortuga Lane in Surf City, is open for daily tours from noon to 4 p.m., save for Wednesdays and Sundays, beginning in June and continuing on into the fall. The center has rehabilitated and released more than 300 turtles since 1997, and in recent days, 5 more turtles were brought into the center, bringing the total number currently in the center's care to nearly 60. Close to 30 of these will likely be released back to the ocean in June. I have been present for several of the absolutely thrilling releases back to the wild of Topsail's rehabilitated turtles. These events draw hundreds and hundreds of people who stand on either way of a created pathway from the walkway onto the beach to the water. Volunteers carry the turtles up to the shoreline, and then these marvelous creatures crawl the rest of the way back into their natural habitat. The delighted dash of the turtles and the joy on the faces of staff members and volunteers who have nursed the turtles back to health is infectious. Great cheers arise. Many tears fall from all who are present. Releases of this kind take place in various coastal locations around the United States. Be looking for announcements and join the onlookers, or even better, become a volunteer. It takes more than 150 volunteers to run the beach monitoring program on Topsail, and many more to attend to rescues and releases and to welcome visitors to the center. You can make a difference for sea turtles, coming alongside to aid these engaging denizens of the deep. Well, let's take another break for commercial messages. When we return, we'll be tracking turtles.
You think that you're rescuing them, but honestly, they're going to end up rescuing you. You don't know what they've gone through. And they're not going to be perfect, and they are so happy that you are taking a chance on them to be a part of your family. I urge you to go down to your local shelters, pounds, dog rescues, foundations, you name it, and rescue a dog. Once you get your rescue dog, you should definitely order some DinoVite. Go online and order it. DinoVite.com. DinoVite. It's awesome stuff. 90 days of DinoVite will make your dog a happy dog. It will help them with their overall health. You don't need to spend thousands on vet bills. DinoVite is the best thing that's ever happened to my dogs, you know, besides me, of course. Call 859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DinoVite.com.
Begging to hear more of your favorite show? Full episodes of all our shows are available on demand. Go to PetLifeRadio.com to fetch our entire lineup of Possum Pet Podcasts. Also, dig us up in iHeartRadio Talk and iTunes. Let's talk pets. Live and on demand, only from Pet Life Radio.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
We're back, and you're listening to Wildlife, Wild Places on Pet Life Radio. Today, scientists recognize 7 species of sea turtles. According to the Sea Turtle Conservancy, the loggerhead is the one most often seen. It was listed in the United States under the Endangered Species Act as threatened in 1978, and it is the only sea turtle species not listed as endangered today. The majority of loggerhead nesting is concentrated in 2 main areas of the world, at Masara Island, Oman, in the Middle East, and on the coast of the southeastern United States. Up to 25,000 loggerheads nest in the southeastern U.S. each year, with the majority of nesting taking place on Florida's Atlantic coast. As I noted earlier on, Topsail is one of the northern rookeries for this species. The other species that we may see on Topsail is the green, which, though endangered, has been seen in increasing numbers in Florida. Far less likely for us to encounter, but still within the realm of possibility to be found, are the leatherback, Kemp's Ridley, and the hawksbill. Rounding out the 7 are the olive ridley and the flatback. I recently participated in a training to prepare me to serve as a beach monitor. Leading the training was Terry Meyer, director of the Sea Turtle Beach Patrol Project. Much of what I'll be sharing in the remainder of the show is drawn from her excellent presentation. Terry told us that sea turtles can live for about 100 years, will be able to reproduce around age 30, and may nest for 50 to 60 years. Each female will mate with several males to ensure good genetic diversity of the species. Only the females will come ashore to nest. Males almost never return to land once they leave the sand of their natal beach. The females will nest 3 to 5 times in a season in 2-week intervals between dusk and dawn, laying an average of 120 ping-pong-sized
soft, leathery eggs in each clutch. The females will deposit the eggs and return to the sea. Incubation will last between 45 and 90 days, depending on the location of the nest and the amount of sun it receives. The later the eggs are deposited in the season, the longer the incubation period. As Terry noted, and as I also read in a Washington Post article, unlike mammals, birds, and other creatures, whose sex is set by the chromosomes they get from their parents, the trigger that causes turtle embryos to develop as male or female comes from outside the eggs. Warmer ambient temperatures during incubation will make the hatchling skew female, but keep the eggs just a few degrees cooler, and they'll come out mostly male. As a majority of the turtles emerging from the more southern rookeries are female, the northern rookeries are crucial for the production of males. When the hatchlings emerge from their nests, they weigh about 2 ounces, and they will absorb their yolks for energy. Their emergence is referred to as the boil, because the effect is of the sand boiling. Little noses start to appear, and they all come up together to make the long trek to the water, imprinting as they walk, so that 30 years into the future, they will be able to return to their natal beach. Only 1 in 1,000 will survive the first year. Only 1 in 5 to 10,000 will live to maturity. All of the hatchlings, from Miami to the Virginia line, will head out to the Sargasso Sea, living in a nursery of seaweed wraps for their first couple of years. Threatening their continued existence are plastics that find their way into our oceans, marine debris such as nets and discarded fishing gear in which they can become entangled, and balloons and bags which turtles may ingest, mistaking these for jellyfish. Mechanized fishing also threatens them, as long lines with thousands of hooks can't discriminate between tuna and turtles. Bottom trawling that disturbs habitats and contacts with boats and dredges pose further dangers. Before they even emerge from their nests, however, they will face other perils. Ghost crabs are eager to feed on them, and coyotes and foxes, driven out of their natural inland habitats by humans, are now also looking to the beaches for food. Even before the eggs are laid, if a female turtle can't reach a nesting site because of seawalls or sandbags or other barriers, she'll dump those eggs in the ocean without ever laying them, because she'll already have another clutch in her body waiting to be deposited. Sea turtles need the assistance of human beings if they are to continue to exist in this world. I am delighted that I am now counted among those who are coming alongside, lending a hand, as I've said, as a beach monitor. As Lois, the partner with whom I've been paired, and I walk, we'll be looking for flipper tracks and sea turtle nests. We'll be walking early in the morning in hopes of completing our rounds before the tracks can be washed away. If we come upon tracks, we'll check to see whether they are alternating tracks, indicating a loggerhead, or parallel tracks, indicating a green turtle. We'll hope to find both incoming and outgoing tracks, pointing us to the nest and lending us some assurance that the turtle has laid her eggs and returned to the ocean. If they're incoming only, the concern will be that she's gotten off track and we'll need to locate her. We'll be hoping we will not find evidence of a false crawl, where a turtle has come onto the beach, but has abandoned the idea of nesting and has returned to the water without laying her eggs. If we find a nest, we'll temporarily mark the site with paint stakes and flagging tape encompassing the entire disturbed and mounded area. We'll then contact a coordinator, with whom we'll return to restake the nest, place signage, record the date, and record the nest location using GPS. We'll also photograph and sketch the nest area and provide measurements and identifying nearby landmarks. Some nests may have to be relocated if they are in areas where the eggs might be imperiled. Decisions on relocations are made by the area coordinators. Once the nests are secured and further protections are put in place, the wait will be on. Once deposited, the eggs, as we've said, will incubate from about 45 to 90 days, the exact time dependent on temperature and other weather factors. When the time draws near for a likely emergence from the egg chamber, nest sitters will assume watch, protecting the nest from predators, asking neighbors to turn off their lights, and encouraging interested onlookers to be respectful of the turtles. Rampers will create a wide, smooth track from the nest to the high tide line, providing an easy getaway for the tiny hatchlings and providing a barrier, keeping turtles in and people out. Rampers will do their work every night until the hatch, using a squeegee and a push broom. The hatches will happen while the beaches are busy. After all, Topsail grows from a winter population of 5,000 to between 25,000 and 30,000 in the summer. Nest sitting often draws a crowd, and crowd control is crucial. Artificial lighting can disorient hatchlings and draw them landward to roads. The local electric company does its best to turn off offending streetlights, and as summer rentals are turned over, new visitors will be asked to extinguish their lights whenever possible. Should there be a problem still with lights when the hatchlings emerge, a nest sitter will stand in the water, shining a white light back toward the hatchlings. Hatchling sea turtles are drawn to the brightest light, but care will be taken not to shine that light in their eyes. When it's time for the boil, which invariably comes in the cool of night, everyone will kneel down and watch, while 100 or so little ones crawl up through 18 inches of sand in the span of about 10 minutes. Sitters will remain at the nest for another hour or so, waiting to see if there might be any stragglers, for it is not uncommon to see a few more emerge after the boil. Much of the walking, ramping, and nest-sitting will be done by citizen scientists, volunteers with a love for wildlife who share of their time to assist in conservation. In the last fiscal year, 28,532 hours were donated to this extraordinary effort on behalf of Topsail's turtles. In a future episode, I'll be sharing more details about my experience with the Sea Turtle Project at Topsail. I hope you'll join me in coming alongside to help wildlife and to protect wild spaces. Here are some suggestions of things to do to assist sea turtles. Make ocean-friendly choices when you eat seafood. If your go-to variety of fish is on the avoid list because a species is being overfished, consider trying some new seafood. Don't release balloons into the air. Too many wild creatures run afoul of these. Stop using single-use plastics and plastic bags, as these often end up in our oceans. If you dig a hole in the sand while visiting the beach, be sure to fill it in before you leave, so a sea turtle won't get stuck and upended in it when she comes in to lay her eggs. Topple any sandcastles you build. And be sure to take home any toys, chairs, umbrellas, or other items that you've carried to the beach. If you're on the beach at night and need light, use a red filter on your flashlight. And for the sake of all nocturnal animals, and in hopes of regaining the glories of the night sky for all of us, reduce and or redirect all artificial lights. I do hope you'll make time today to get out into the natural world, listening for, looking out for, and celebrating the treasures that are all around us. Photographs and more information about today's topic can be found in the blog and on the Facebook page and Twitter feed as well that accompanies this program. I invite you to visit these sites, and when you do, please share comments and conservation news as ideas come to you. For more information about sea turtles, visit seaturtle.org. And of course, I invite you to tune in next time as we head out to explore the world of wildlife and wild places.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.